Welcome to the Marketing Millennials, the No BS Marketing Podcast. I'm Daniel Murray, and join me for unfiltered conversations with the brains behind marketing's coolest companies. The one request I tell our guests, stories or it didn't happen. Get ready to turn the f*** up.
If my biggest constraint is churn as a company, sure, there's some big decisions that need to be made at the company level, in product, and so on. But maybe you don't control that. And the reality is, we probably don't. So, okay, then what can I do as a marketer to help with churn?
Wistia is a complete video platform that lets you make high-quality videos fast right in your browser. Record your face and screen, use AI to write scripts, even add background music. Try Wistia for free at wistia.com/millennials. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Marketing Millennials. Today, I have Eva on the podcast. A little backstory about Eva. I was at a mastermind offsite with a bunch of marketing leaders, and I was hearing Eva talk about growth loops and growth levers, and I was just like, could listen to her talk forever about that. So I wanted to bring her on the podcast to talk about that. And I thought she can share some interesting perspective on this podcast. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Eva.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was a fun mastermind.
I wanted to get into first, how did you get into marketing?
I don't know, a bit randomly. I started in finance and, I liked numbers and data, but I didn't feel like they were telling a story unless they were kind of tied to some tangible, actionable decisions. And so when I was in CPG earlier in my career, I became an analyst, but for marketing. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's more like it, you know, data-driven, but yet it has like impacts on the brand or decisions. What are we going to do to grow the market or expand our market share and so on? And it wasn't just staying within the finance team. So that was like my early career jump over to marketing. And I guess I just stayed in that field for a while.
I think that's awesome. I think a lot of people who have one impact or one creativity in their life and they're in like a finance structured role, they gravitate to a marketing role where you can still do fun things with numbers, but you actually get to do something with those numbers, not just tell people what those numbers mean.
Yeah, exactly.
I know you're very passionate about growth loops and you use it a lot in your strategy. So could you define what a growth loop is first for everybody? And then we can talk about how you think about implementing them in your organization or organizations you've been a part of.
First, I'm going to credit Reforge because I think they're the pioneer of this thinking. And I've learned a lot from that organization, so I would check them out. But growth loops, or a loop as opposed to a funnel, I think that's really where the distinction is to really think of growth and growth at being acquisition, monetization, and retention. So not just acquisition, but thinking of your growth as a system. And so how do you acquire a user? How do you monetize user? How do you retain them? And how does that then compound into reinvesting that money or that capital into more acquisition? So instead of being a funnel, which is very linear, in which you always have to invest more at the top, so you want more customers at the bottom, then you need more money at the top, you need more everywhere, so that at the end of the day, at the end of the funnel, you have more customers. The loop concept, I think, challenges that idea in which you can find efficiencies in this circularity to accelerate growth that are not necessarily about just adding more, basically adding more capital. And so I think it's a more holistic view of growth. And I think it, from my perspective, it served me really well in scaling tech companies and scaling acquisition and monetization and retention, so that you think of compounding systems as opposed to just linear growth.
Can you go into an example that you use for a growth loop that you do today? how you think about that process of the loop.
So let's say taking the typical SEO loop as opposed to an SEO funnel. So in a company generated loop, or where you are creating content, you know, the loop could start by, okay, you're creating content. The company creates content. Then obviously you want that content to rank on Google, most likely. So the first step is, for example, creating content. The second step could be, great, it's ranking, therefore it's driving traffic to this content. Then you have a certain amount of conversion into your leads or MQL or whatever the name is for that opportunity. And then some of these leads will convert into customers. And those customers will then generate some capital or revenue that you can then reinvest in creating additional content. And so step one can be wherever you want it, but at the end of the day, create content, distribute that content, get traffic, convert that traffic, make money, reinvest the money.
Yeah, that's a simple example. And I wanted to also go into one thing that you talked about is at the mastermind, but how do you think about either reinvesting in an existing growth loop or deciding on a new growth loop to invest in? And when you're coming up with a marketing strategy that you're doing?
I'm going to try to keep it simple. So one of the way I look at loops, let's say you join a company, I will map out what the growth system look like. So what are the channels that are being used right now? What is the average sales per customer, ASP or LTV, whatever metric again you're using? How long do we retain customers? How fast can we reinvest that money into acquisition? So I will map this out. So then I have a clear understanding of how the company grows. And then that's the overall system. And then after that, each channel, just to make it simple, has their own loop dynamics. I gave one example for SEO. And so when looking at that SEO loop, I will zoom in into the biggest growth constraint. So at the surface, is it that we can't produce enough content within the loop cycle to then hit the growth expectations? Or is it that we could, but we don't have enough money to create more content? And so, you know, with time, you kind of realize patterns. And so by now, I kind of take shortcut. But let's say you do it from scratch, then I see the whole system. Great. We grow through SEO and affiliate. Perfect. The biggest growth constraint in SEO is we can't generate enough content to make the growth as big as we want. That'd be diving even deeper. And that's where I think the magic happens. Okay, well, why can't we generate enough content? Is it a matter of execution? Is it we don't have the right team? Is it that we don't have enough money? It's costing us too much. There could be so many questions to dive deeper into that constraint. And then that's to go back to your initial question. If I look at all my growth constraints in the company, maybe it's we don't monetize a customer well enough. I make $10 per transaction and they churn after 3 months. So basically, I just don't have enough juice to create more content. So wherever the growth constraint is, I think the question is, do I feel confident that I can move that constraint? And hopefully there's some yeses, because it's easier, obviously, to move a constraint from a loop that you already spent years building than it is to launch a brand new channel or a brand new growth opportunity or growth loop. So I would always start by looking at a little bit of the low-hanging fruits. Can we accelerate growth by optimizing for the existing loop? But if, say, we've been doing that now for 2 years, we're pretty efficient and we're hitting this diminishing return, then I would look at, you know, with time, you will hit diminishing return on your content. So the more content you create in a specific niche, the potentially less likely and the less traffic you'll get over time. And so you could go super wild and map this out like quantitatively if you have the resources, but it's quite a heavy exercise. Or you could just like look at the constraint that you have, make hypotheses, and then decide that like, okay, I think it's going to be really hard to move the needle here because of the context, because of the budget, because of whatever. So then that's when I would ask the question, okay, do we tweak the loop entirely? So we need to change something drastic. So for example, instead of company generated, I would move to user generated. So can I get users to create content for me instead of me creating content? And then I might move my needle for the level or number of content created. So that could be, okay, I'm adding something new, but within the existing channel. And then the other option would be I'm launching a new channel completely, but that would require some understanding of how that channel will play within my existing growth ecosystem, because it can't just live on itself. You'll still have to reinvest money into this channel, and it still has to bring you some kind of circularity there. And that's obviously a lot harder to start, you know, net new. But if you are hitting diminishing return, you have like optimized for your growth constraints and within, you know, your the knowledge of your business and the target audience and so on, you know that it's going to be hard to get some additional breath, then that's where I would be thinking about adding a net new growth loop or a net new channel.
One of the most powerful forces in a lot of things in life is momentum. And with a growth loop, that's what it really is. It's you keep reinvesting into a momentum, a channel that is giving you momentum. Even if it's slowing down, it's still moving. And sometimes if you think about doing too many channels, you're going to stop a wheel that was moving pretty well for you for a long period of time. And that's why focus, thinking like this, is focus is the main priority. Also, I think a lot of people forget that they go immediately to blame the channel instead of thinking about all the levers that they can fix inside a channel to make that channel better. I think they just immediately say, oh, it's not doing X, so let's just stop it. Instead of thinking, have we looked at it as a retention play? Have we looked at it as middle, right? Have we looked at it as top of funnel play? There's something still that we can squeeze juice out of this channel.
What you're saying is a good example of growth holistically, right? Because a loop is by default an acquisition loop. If you look at it like in isolation, you're going to make decision to tweak something that might not be the right decisions. If you're thinking of it as a system to what you're saying, where like, okay, maybe we're just not making enough money from our customer. And that is what is preventing you from growing through paid advertising, for example. Like you need to be able to see that system to understand, okay, my loop is I spend money, they convert on a website, I reinvest in ads, I have a CPC, and then it spins. Well, CPC will just increase by default over time or customer click because you will hit like that less qualified audience. You know that will happen. So is the loop that is the constraint that you need to optimize CPC? Or is it I need to make more money out of my customers so that I can allow myself to bid higher and therefore the constraint can just be moved from whatever, a $4 CPC to I can absorb an $8 CPC. And now you just like double the efficiency of that loop. So that's the danger with this thinking and even with just funnel thinking in general. It's like, okay, I need to optimize in this little micro ecosystem, but really maybe the best decision is like, oh, actually we need to increase pricing. And then boom, I just unlocked growth from multiple loops at the same time.
A lot of marketing teams stick too far top of funnel and they don't think about, okay, you as a marketing is everything in an organization. So they can touch, you can add more to the top or you can make the rest of that loop more efficient. And the loop doesn't stop at an opportunity or sale. It keeps going like you said in the loop. So
yeah.
And I think a lot of people stop at, oh, I only can optimize to like lead to op or op to sale instead of thinking it holistically as a growth loop.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that you can do as a marketer that will make you 10x more impactful. And one example, tangibly speaking, that I have around that was when I was at Bench. We mapped all this model and the growth loops and whatever. And across all of our loops, churn was the biggest growth constraint. Because you use a loop system, if you have less money to reinvest in acquisition, then it is either a matter of they're churning or it's a matter of they're not spending enough money, in short. And we realize, okay, you know what? What's preventing us from growing as a company right now today is not like conversion rate from traffic to opportunity on the ads loop. It's actually churning because we can't reinvest fast enough and we're basically, you know, struggling. And that actually led from bringing it all the way to back to marketing. Okay, if my biggest constraint is churn as a company, sure, there's some big decisions that need to be made at the company level, in product, and so on. But maybe you don't control that. And the reality is we probably don't. So, okay, then what can I do as a marketer to help with churn? It's most likely going to go through better targeted ICP. Okay, I can see that this ideal client profile is churning, you know, 50% less. Okay, then how do I acquire that type of customer to fuel my loop, increase retention, and therefore just make the whole acquisition much more efficient? So the model in the loop system is really like the framework to think, but then it's what you do after that has the most impact, I think.
One of the biggest superpowers a marketer you can do as a marketer is get with finance and understand the levers in the business. And you came from a finance background, so you understand that, but also understand the holistic, how businesses work, not just how marketing works. And I think a lot of marketers get trapped in only understanding their channel or only understanding marketing as a whole, but not understanding how marketing affects sales, how it affects CS, how it affects product, how it affects the whole business. I think we get too, a lot of times because we're busy, get too inundated with just thinking what marketing's doing, but not, like you said, go and look at what channel is churning the most people, what ICP is churning the most people, and look at it as a holistic approach on how it affects the whole business, not just how it's affecting opportunities or sales.
And obviously, if you have a go-to-market model that is hybrid between whatever product-led and sales enhanced, or just that is fully sales-driven, I think that's even more important, because most likely the growth constraints will be in the middle between marketing and sales. And you can say, oh, the conversion rate from MQL to customer or MQL to SQL or is the constraint. Okay, great. Chances are it's not just a sales problem. So, take it a layer deeper. Is it the quality of the leads? Okay, so then what's wrong with the quality of the leads? Or what's wrong with the conversion? Oh, we're noticing that there's this pattern of conversion with this type of lead. Okay, great. And that creates like a momentum. Like that really usually fires people up because you really have collaboration. You're not isolating each other. And you're thinking of growth for the company. You're not just saying how much more leads can I get on Facebook and then that's the end of the story.
I also think that helps marketers get a bigger seat at the table, right? Which a lot of marketers don't have that seat because they just seen as a lead generating machine, not a not a growth machine,
and it's true. I don't know if like even with this thinking, I've successfully shifted that image, but it definitely gave me more street cred and more power to impact change across the business as opposed to just within marketing.
I think marketing's main job is twofold. One is put as much as you can that is great in a funnel, and then figure out how to convert it better down the funnel, because you are ultimately, besides having SDRs who are technically also lead gen machines too, you have to think but sometimes it's better to focus on the conversion path than putting too much atop, because if there's a hole in the loop, you're screwed, and it doesn't matter how much you bring in the top, because there's just going to be leaks everywhere in the font, in the loop.
I think you can model that, and that's the beauty of this system, right? It's like, okay, if you think the biggest growth constraint is conversion at whichever step, then what does great look like? So say today you have a 2% conversion from traffic to MQL, just shooting random numbers. Okay, and you think that you can get it to 5, which would be a huge bump. Well, what does that look like when you make this change on your growth trajectory? So you can model that. Okay, I keep all the other variables equal. I move this variable in my growth loop from 2 to 5. How much more MRR, how much more ARR am I generating compared to if I add 500,000 session in traffic, for example? And that is also the greatness of the system thinking. It's like you always should be working on the opportunity that will add the most value and the most growth for your organization. And that shouldn't be opinion-based. It should be data-based. And it should be based on the systems or that holistic view that you have. And if it is indeed conversion and you can prove it, then you'll also get buy-in because it's no-brainer. And then you get resources and you get support as opposed to scrambling and doing a bunch of tactics across all of these different touch points. And then really you're not hitting a home run anywhere.
Hey, marketers, listen up. Wistia is my best kept secret for creating videos for your business. You can record and edit videos right in your browser and even use their AI to write your script. With Wistia, you can record your face and screen for videos like sales pitches or product demos. And the video editor is pretty much foolproof. Seriously, you've got to check it out. Start creating videos for free at wistia.com/millennials. That's wistia.com/millennials. Say you're doing your strategy from, let's say, 2024.
Yeah.
You are mapping out all the growth constraints you have. You're saying, okay, this has this left, this has this left, this has this left. How do you start now prioritizing? Because obviously there's going to be 15 things that you could possibly fix. How do you start prioritizing and say, hey, marketing team, we're going to focus on these top three or these top four because they're going to move the needle the most for the organization?
So I use a blend of the Reforge thinking on loop modeling and from the strategy framework from Playing to Win from Robert Martin. They developed that framework at like Procter & Gamble. So it's a very like corporate strategy type approach, but I don't know, I found my own groove by adapting it to tech and combining that growth thinking. So I always start with, even before modeling growth constraints, what is our winning aspiration for next year? Is it growth in terms of ARR? Is it MRR? Is it, you know, number of customers? And I ideally do that as a company. What are we optimizing for? Because that will have an impact on the choices, I think, that you're making as a marketer. So for example, if you're saying, okay, 50% growth in MRR is the goal. Probably every SaaS company out there has 100%, 150% growth of the MRR. But let's say that's the target. Then my second step would be identifying those growth constraints. So doing the work that we've been talking about. Okay, right now in my marketing mix or in the organization, here are the biggest growth constraints. Then it's about, okay, now we know what we want to achieve. What's our winning aspiration? We know like what's preventing us from hitting that aspiration. And the third question that I always ask is, okay, who can we win convincingly win with and for? And that would be your audience. And so now I would, if not, we already ideally have ICPs, but I would define very clearly where should we play and who can we convincingly create value for? Because then that will also influence the decisions that we're going to make after. So now that I have, okay, what's our goal? How are we going to win? Here's our biggest growth constraint. And then we want to target these folks because we know we can create the most value for them. Then you go into generating possibilities. Now you have this context, you have this framework, then you can generate a set of however you want. You can go as wild as you want and then narrow eventually. But at the beginning, I like to have a more like open process. Okay, what are the things we could be doing to address these four or five biggest growth constraints? And then we're not talking about all the constraints. We're talking about like the four or five, maybe the two or three that could have a drastically outsized impact on growth. You have a flesh out a bunch of possibilities. Okay, we can launch TikTok ads. We could, we could launch a reseller partner program. We could blah, blah, blah. We could double down on web conversion optimization. Whatever the growth constraint is, you have your set of possibilities. And then you test those possibilities against a few different factors. What are your core capabilities? Because do you even have the resources to execute against that initiative? Because you might say, amazing, we're going to launch a reseller program, and you have nobody that's doing partner marketing or partner program. Okay, well, it doesn't mean you can't do it, but this is going to be net new growth loop. And this will mean more investment, more risk, and we don't have the core capabilities. So I would just break it differently than ones that we already have. So do you have the core capabilities? You can use ICE if you want, but what are the risk associated with that? What would be the timeline for impact? What's the effort required? Again, do you have the money? Do you have the resources to execute against those ideas? And then I would narrow those further. Probably some will be weeded out immediately. Like, yeah, we don't have a partner program person and we don't have money. Okay, then we will park this one. Now you're probably coming down, I don't know, with maybe 4, 5, 10, depending on the size of your team and organization, possibilities that could be real, that are tied to your audience, that are tied to your growth constraints, that are tied to your ultimate goal. And from there, I would ask the one killer question, which is, what would have to be true for this initiative to be the best possible choice for us? And then the team would map all the constraints and the things that could go awfully wrong. So I think that like the customers won't be on this channel. Or what has to be true is that my customer, my audience has to be there. I think what has to be true is that there's not a lot of competition and they're not going to be outbidding us for this segment of the market if we were to launch whatever. So this is rigorous and it needs a lot of thinking, but what do you have to prove and what has to be true for this to be a terrific choice? Probably weed out a few others that might be too big of constraints or too uncertain. And then that's what your Q1 plan of attack looks like. All right, I have like four or five initiatives that made all this cut, but I still have constraints and potential barriers that might be a risk for us to be successful. And I would design Q1 as the experimentation against those barriers. So if I think that in order to scale TikTok ads, I need to hit these type of metrics to prove that this channel is viable for us, great. This is the objective of Q1. It's not like 10x growth in customers. It's, we're testing this new loop. Here's what I need to hit to make this loop work for our business. That is a Q1 target. And then you have your holistic strategy for the year, roughly. You know, we're going to do this and this and this. But you also have like an action plan to make sure and validate that strategy so you don't go on a complete tangent and just keep trying to push a square into a triangle.
I think the way you aligned it and said it is makes it so you actually go through the thought process of I think one of the biggest things is people say launch a TikTok channel, then nobody's ever run a TikTok ad, and then you don't have the resources. But I think thinking all these restraints, like, do we have a budget restraint? Do we have resource constraint? Do we have time constraint? Do we have all these things that you could think about that could possibly, but also sometimes you might have a constraint that isn't as risky as you think is the constraint. So you're just going to, it's basically be looking at your risk profile and saying, am I willing to take this risk? Am I willing to take that risk? Also, what's the upside and what's the downside of taking this risk if I go down this path?
Totally.
But I think the way you said it, with first looking at what is the goal, where we can win as a company, and then breaking it down as now here are our levers that we have as a marketing team. Not what's our constraints as a marketing team, and then going down the going down that process helps.
And then ideally, when you present it to whoever, because you might need to justify it, that you always kind of bring it back to this data driven decision making. Because if you're like, okay, I have a paid ad loop right now, one of our constraints is cost per click. We're only doing search ads. It's really becoming expensive. We can't spend more because we don't have enough revenue, but we don't have any short-term solution for that, for like monetizing more. So, okay, we're stuck. What could we do? Brainstorm, think of ideas, generate possibilities. One of the possibilities that comes up is, okay, we could expand this loop and, you know, add TikTok because we believe the CPC will be lower. And here's the conversion that we think we can expect from this, you know, tweaked loop or additional loop. And when I put the strategy together, for example, for Q1, you'd say, great, here's why. Obviously, I picked TikTok. And that makes a lot of sense. It's hard to debate because, oh, I know that I have my audience is interior designers, and I know that there's this TAM on TikTok. So I know they're there and I need to reduce my CPC. I'm launching TikTok. It's going to be cheaper. Now, what has to be true is that I can hit a certain level of conversion to lead or MQL so that it actually is worth the investment. So then in Q1, for example, you could set your targets around that growth loop. Okay, I need this CPC or whichever other metric, and I need this conversion. And then if I do that, then I'm going to get exactly the output that I modeled in my growth model, because that's just what I've established. And if I don't, then obviously you don't get the expected growth, but at least you know where you're going, and it's easier to put together a forecast. And I'd argue that it's always a pain in the butt when you get top-down forecast. So with this, you can literally give back a bottom-up forecast that's based on tangible initiative. Sure, there's a bunch of things that's going to go wrong, but like, at least you have a framework.
How do you balance faster loops versus long tail loops? Like SEO is going to take way longer to pay off, but you know, in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 2 years, you're going to see payoffs versus, you know, if you put money in Meta, for example, you're going to see X return. So how do you balance the two, speed with a loop?
It's a good question. It's not that straightforward. And I'm sure there's many other ways to think about that. But the way that I've approached it, I pick the same time period to measure my return on the loop. Otherwise, it's like comparing apple to oranges. So it's, if I'm looking at a loop and I'm looking at a monthly return cycle, then I could look at multiple months. So say I'm looking at my growth horizon or my growth potential over 2 years, but I'm measuring in months. And I think that can help SEO because over time it'll compound. So for example, in the formula, I don't want to get too detailed, but in the formula of the SEO loop, you consider that the content that you have on the site is getting, the amount of content is increasing. So if the formula is from the certain amount of content that I have, I'm generating an average number of session. Well, over time, if I have 500 articles, 600 articles, 700 articles, 800 articles, then by default, that will increase the traffic and therefore will generate returns that will compound and most likely would outpace paid quite quickly. Well, depending of your loop, but could be what, six months, 12 months. And I think you could demonstrate that. You just need to be thinking a little bit more about how you want to model it.
I also, because I used to run marketing ops, is the metric I like to look at channels specifically is blended CAC and CAC payback in good places. If blended CAC and CAC payback are good places, you could invest more and more. If they're not, then you have to start thinking about changes to make. But if you look at things holistically, like you're saying, in metrics wise, okay, our CAC payback is pretty good. Our blended CAC for all these channels are doing well. We also obviously have to dive into channel specifics too, but if blended CAC's good, you can invest in something longer to be able to see returns. If it's not, then you have to think about, how do I fix that growth loop or not fix that growth loop?
Totally. I just started to experiment with that this year, but it's been serving us well, specifically for SEO. Like, I've been looking at net new content payback. So every time, say we have created content in January, cohort of content, it'll take time, but if we do our job well, eventually it'll drive traffic and eventually it'll drive some leads. Cohort, because that doesn't mean they're all, you know, bottom of the funnel or they're all like meant to drive a ton of leads. Might be just more traffic or so on. But I think looking at like cohort-based CAC on SEO, so I produced those articles in January and by whatever, June, 6 months later or July, depending on the size and domain authority, you know, I recovered all my payback because I drove X amount of customers, X amount of leads, and then it cost me at that January cohort $5,000 to produce this content. That's been a great way for me to demonstrate the impact of SEO because it's compounding, obviously, but it's also, I'm demonstrating the isolated effect, and some cohorts don't have the same level of payback. Then you have blended. But still, I can show that on average, most of the time I get payback on the new net new content created within 6 months, 8 months, 12 months. And that just gives you some good munition to compare it against channels like paid, which have.
Yeah, you also could benchmark against that because if your hypothesis is right, that payback period should shorten as you produce more and more content. So
yeah,
It might be 8 months, but if that's your baseline at first, then you can say, Okay, it was 8 months and we decreased 8 months to 4 months of content payback.
And it's a really good point. And that would give you some love for SEO for a fixed education.
The last question I have for you is, what is a marketing hill you would die on?
Well, I have a few, but I would definitely die on optimizing and working on what matters most, and therefore what is your biggest growth constraint, and like aligning with other teams that this is the biggest growth constraint. Because what I see too often is, oh well, product is going to go optimize this thing and sales is going to go optimize this thing, and like at the end of the day they're so trivial compared to maybe the biggest growth constraint that could be a huge unlock for the business. I will die on that hard, and I will refuse the hat of just being purely lead generators.
I think that's great because I think, like we said before, gives you the seat at the table first, and second, it aligns the whole business. I remember we were producing a lot of leads in a certain ICP that we thought is a great ICP. Sales was selling it, but the biggest growth constraint we had was that a product couldn't serve that ICP to the same level as the other ICP. But if we didn't recognize that, we would have just kept dumping money into ICP that would churn later. So we kind of tapered back that ICP till product got to a spot where we can handle that. And then we could ramp up that ICP. We knew it worked from a acquisition point of view, but I mean, if it works from an acquisition point of view, it's going to work on a product point of view or a CS point of view or any other point of view. So
yeah, totally. And that's a great example of that. And I think it also shuts down the conversation. Like, why would you want me to go optimize for more leads of this ICP when I can prove with data that like there's such a bigger burning opportunity, which is maybe not this ICP or like different product improvements.
Yeah. And you also could say, okay, if that is a big opportunity, then we have to invest in fixing that product constraint or that CS constraint or whatever constraint you have. If it is a big opportunity, like you said.
Yeah.
Lastly, where could people find you and what you're doing and follow you?
On LinkedIn, or for those who are familiar, Reforge launched a sub-product called Artifacts. So it's, you know, documentation of a lot of like leaders in tech and specific artifacts of what they've done. So I've published a bunch of artifacts there that might be helpful for some folks, hopefully. So I think those would be the two places.
I kind of like that name. I got to go look at Artifacts. Right? Is a cool name for that's yeah. Good branding right there. There must be marketers who handle that.
Yeah, they're pretty smart cookies out there. I think it's a catchy name.
Well, thank you so much for being on and sharing your knowledge, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Daniel. I really appreciate it. I hope that your audience finds it useful.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in next week to hear more great insights from marketing's coolest operators. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the Marketing Millennials podcast and giving it a 5-star rating. It helps bring more marketers into our community.